This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 761.
You have about 34 doors now, 34 I think is what you said. When you were a kid, sleeping on the floor, all you wanted was a bed of your own in a house.
Yes.
How does it feel to achieve what you've achieved?
It's unreal. Like, it's sometimes like, this is me.
What's going on, everyone? This is David Green, your host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, joined today by that echo you hear in the background, Rob Abasolo, with an episode that, frankly, I don't have words for. If you don't like to cry, you might want to just turn this one off right now, because even the toughest person out there is probably going to shed a little tear and be incredibly inspired.
Yeah, it's a story of perseverance that, yeah, I think hit home for me and will hit home for everybody at home. What do you think?
Today's guest, Yamu Kamara, is like the poster child for Bigger Pocket success. I mean, she built in 3 years a portfolio that you will be shocked by. And she just used the basic techniques we talk about. Before we get to this interview with Yamu, which I know you're all going to love, and I'm going to ask you ahead of time to please share this podcast with other people. Even if they're not super into real estate, they will be after listening to this. I'm going to throw it to Rob for today's quick tip.
Ooh, yeah, a little curveball here, David. Lucky for you and for everyone at home, I came prepared. And my quick tip is, I'm not stalling, buy your contractor lunch.
Listen, it's not coffee or donuts. It's not campfires or s'mores. Not peanut butter or jelly. Great things happen when two good things come together. So why choose between cash flow or appreciation? Rent to Retirement's new construction homes give you both. Rent to Retirement offers newly built homes that attract the best tenants with fewer repairs and outstanding rental markets. That means more monthly cash flow for you and plenty of equity growth in the background. Plus, their creative financing options let you buy investment properties with just 5% down. Not 20%, not 10%, 5% down. Rent to Retirement offers turnkey new construction homes already built, leased, and managed for you. Their investing experts find the best markets that consistently offer double-digit returns and prices as low as $150,000. And they've got more 5-star reviews than any company on Bigger Pockets. You invest, Rent to Retirement does the rest. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all Bigger Pockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com. Using code BP2024. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, without any further ado, let's get to Yamu. Welcome, Yamu, to the Bigger Pockets Podcast. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yes, let's jump right into this thing. I want to hear about your story. So tell me, where are you originally from? And can you give us an idea how you grew up?
Sure. So my name is Yamundao Kamara, but I go by Yamu for short. I'm from West Africa, a small country called the Gambia, West Coast. It's by Senegal, a little country inside Senegal, literally. So it's about 2.something million. I'm the seventh child of my family. And yeah, I grew up in that small village. I lost my mom when I was 2, and I lost my dad when I was 11. So I was raised by my elder sister. And yeah, that's a little background about me.
So what was it like growing up there? Most of us have not traveled to the continent of Africa, much less where you're from. Tell us a little bit about what daily life was like.
Yeah, so it's more of, we live in extended family. So when my mom passed, I was 2. Before my dad passed, he was really sick. So my sister was forced to get married. So she took me with her and my elder brother, who's like 4 or 5 years older than me. So I grew up as an orphan in her in-law's house. Yeah, it was hard growing up in an extended family that you don't belong in. Because usually we live in family. So let's say a family member, like a husband has maybe 4 wives or 5 wives. And they have kids. So that household is all, let's say, the last name is Green. It's like Green Kunda, meaning everybody in the house is Green. So you coming in with a different last name, it's like you don't belong. There's some activities that you will not participate in because you're not a child of that household.
So it was clear growing up from an emotional standpoint, you were a stranger in a sense in the house. I mean, they knew who you were, but you were not welcome with open arms as if you were one of the kids. There was preferential treatment. You had at a very young age, you had to experience a lack of control and the pain that comes from not really having control over the outcome of your own life.
Yes, basically.
So, I mean, you were thrown into a situation you had very little control. Sounds like there was a lot of pain. Did you have your own room? Were you sharing a room with other people? What was that like?
No. So sometimes I would come in, like as a child, just playing with other kids outside. And I just run in to go drink water. And there's a meeting about me and my brother being returned. So I always thought, oh, so we don't belong here. It really hurts as a child. I saw this meme saying on TikTok the other day, and it clicked to me. I was like, this is how it feels. Like, you don't know what pain is until you live in somebody's house who doesn't really want you there. And I was like, that was me. Like, that was like, that clearly explained my life. So I wasn't allowed to sleep on the bed. So I would lay on the floor. And when I say floor, I mean like sand floor, not like cement, not like carpet or anything. So me sleeping on the floor, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old girl, I would have bed bugs. Sometimes worms would come and they would touch me and I'll just wake up. So my brother made me this touchlight, flashlight, you guys call it here. And I just use batteries there. And that night, I would just wake up and I'll kill the bed bugs on the wall. So I guess from there, I was always obsessed with houses because I never really had my father's house. Sometimes when I visit for holidays, we would not eat sometimes. Sometimes we eat once a day. And sometimes when I go one time, it was a rainy season, the summer holidays. And we would have to get up because the water was coming inside the house. That's how poor we were. So even though the family that I lived with, I'm not rich, still a village, but it's a better village it's better than my dad's condition.
Yeah.
So me laying down there as a girl, I always like say, I'm obsessed with houses. So when I see friends whose houses after school, I like to go to the houses. And I always wondered, when day I'm going to get this house, when day I'm going to buy a house. But I didn't think buying multiple houses. I was just saying, just the idea of having a house.
Yeah. You mentioned in that TikTok. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Yamu, for sharing.
I'm sorry.
No. You mentioned in that TikTok that when you're not wanted in the home, I think that's when you experience the pain, right? And so I'm wanting to know, was that really the moment, that inspiration where you're like, I am going to find my own place one day. I'm going to have my own bed. Was that sort of the beginning of your real estate dreams or did it come later on in life?
Yes, that's where it started. I always knew one day I'm going to make it and one day I'm going to buy a home. Like, that was my dream to say one day I also have a home and a bed. Something like a house of my own.
Is that your why? Is that today your why is like the reason you do all this is basically to fulfill that dream?
I have multiple wives, but that's one of them.
What else you got? I want to know.
Poverty. I don't want my child to go through any of those things that I went through ever.
You know, that's something as you were talking, Yamu, that I thought of. The stereotype that wealth and money is the root of all evil. The people that say, like, it's the wealthy people that are the problem. And I was thinking about for you growing up in a house, I'm sure the genesis of why people felt like they didn't want you guys there, they talked about you leaving, was there was not enough money to go around. There was none. If you were not eating maybe one time a day, they were incredibly financially stressed. And so you're a burden in a financial sense, you and your brother, on this other family. And they're thinking from their flesh is what's the easiest way to lighten my own load. And the emotional pain that has on someone else as you experienced was intense. Now, fast forwarding to where you are now, you have 90 units that you own and more under contract. You're making $80,000 a month. You've come a long way from sleeping on a floor, having to wake up to kill bed bugs that were looking to crawl into where you were. Like, I know I just kind of gave a spoiler alert to everybody listening to this, but it is a fantastic story. This is like something right out of a comic book. Like, do you know that you're a superhero?
Oh, I wish I was. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to find out how you did this, right? Like, what happened where you went from just wanting a bed to owning multiple, almost 100 units at this point. So let's go back a little bit again. We understand that life was challenging in other ways other than just financial, especially as a woman in a male-dominated society. Can you list some of the things that you were not supposed to accomplish?
Yes. So this is not how the life of a girl from my village supposed to be. I'm the only one that went to college in my village. For where growing up, a girl is supposed to just go to all the way to maybe middle school, and then you're supposed to get married. For me, it was hard for my aunties to push and my sister to push for my uncles, because the male have more say in the woman's life, especially when you're getting married, your uncles take care of it. So by the time I'm like 16, 17, they're already thinking of arranged marriage. They're already thinking of who you're going to get married to. It's already arranged for you. So for me, for them to even let me to go to high school, to college, was a big deal. Talk less of coming to America by myself and not being married. So by the time I was in high school, most of my friends that I grew up, they already had two kids, already married and everything.
Yamu, did you have to fight to go to high school? Was that like a really big battle with sort of, I guess, your family or your extended family in the household? I mean, I got to imagine that probably didn't come easy, so...
Oh, no, I didn't have to fight. My aunties had to fight. I had to go through my aunties. I don't have the audacity to stand up to my uncles. So my aunties will say, at least she's smart at school. The principal says she's really good. She has a scholarship. We're not spending any money. Just let her go. The same thing with college. It was like, she has a scholarship. Let her go. They begged. Okay, after this, they already had the person I'm going to get married to. I already knew who I was going to get married since I was a young girl. So it's pre-arranged marriage. So I already knew. They were like, okay, she knew she's going to marry this guy when she's done. So it was like, I'd go to my auntie, my mother's sister, my mother's elder sister, who's passed now, rest in peace. But she was fighting for me a lot, and my sister.
Wow. Yeah. So you mentioned that you, obviously your why was the ability to eventually go on and have your own bed and own your home. And you said you don't want to go back to poverty. And that was a big motivation for you.
Yeah.
Was that the same with school? Because you mentioned you're very good at school. This was something that you worked hard at. Did you work hard? Like, was school in your mind your ticket out at that moment? Did you know, okay, if I really crush it in school, if I study and I get good grades, this could be my ticket out of this life?
So for me, I was like, okay, if I do so great and every exam I'm top of my school, I will always have scholarships. So where I'm from is nepotism. For you to get scholarship, you have to have a connection to the government or something. I have none of those connections. So the only way to get through is to be the best from my school, the best out of outstanding one. So I was hoping if I can get to that top, they would not say, oh, we don't have money for her to go, or we don't have this. It would just be, oh, she has a scholarship. What are you losing? Like, it's nothing. She's just going to go. And that's how it happened.
Wow. Okay. This is an amazing story. Again, I thank you for the vulnerability here. Tell us a little bit about, your first entry point into real estate. Was that here in the States? Was that back in Africa?
No, so it started in the States here. With Africa, I just knew that I was gonna, one day I'm gonna make it and buy a house. But at some point, I just wanted to get out, because the more I go on my education, the more I know this is not what I want more. So from high school, I know I want to go to college. I was like, this is gonna be a big deal for me to beg them to go. So I have to do really good for me to get a scholarship to get in. So I made it to college. Because they eventually let me go to college, it was more like, okay, you have to be a doctor. It's but African families, they dictate your life. This guy, especially you're a woman. So it's like, you're going to be a doctor. I have good grades in chemistry, but I don't like biology and chemistry at all. And I don't like blood. So I was like, I have to figure a way away. So there was this program, computer science, that was introduced. Because I was good at math, it kind of clicked for me. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And they're like, you don't want to be a doctor? I said, no, I don't want to be a doctor. So it clicked for me because I love programming. And that's how it is. So me being in the college, but the girls that I started with, all of them dropped out. So I did a bachelor's in computer science and a minor in mathematics. So during my final semester, at this point, there were just a few girls, or maybe two of us. I think two or one of us in a computer science class. So I'll go to some classes, all boys, right? So I was like, you know what? Let me start a nonprofit organization that's going to teach girls how to program, how to code, just basic IT skills. So I started this nonprofit organization. At that time, I wanted to have an internship at a software company in the country there. So I would use their computers and we would travel with my colleagues in the organization and teach girls basic IT skills, like how to create a calculator, how to create folders and stuff like that. So it kind of took off, and then different regions were doing it. So at that time, there was this program called Mandela Washington Fellowship. At this time, President Obama, this is 2016, President Obama was the president. So he started a fellowship named it after Mandela, in honor of Nelson Mandela. He saw the rest in peace, South Africa. And it's for young African leaders that are doing amazing things in their communities, like fighting wars, helping women, violence, crime, all that stuff. So a lot of people will send me this link and say, you need to apply because you're doing amazing things. I'm like, I can't compare to what these people are doing. But okay, I'll just apply. And I applied and I keep going. First interview at the U.S. Embassy, I was selected. Second one, I moved on to the third one. And then they emailed me from D.C. and said, you got it? You're going to come to the U.S.? You're going to come to the U.S. and we're going to place you at Northwestern. And after your fellowship, you meet President Obama in D.C. So that's how I came to the U.S. Yeah.
That is amazing. And I mean, that was that a dream come true, or was that so far out? Because like for me, I imagine your dream was to go to college, but maybe I'm sure you never imagined this, right? So what did that feel like?
I was like a celebrity. My auntie was so happy. So that was also a ticket. Now she has to push. They have to push my sister for me to come because my uncle would not let they were like, she did not even, she got picked by the U.S. government. Just let her go. She's going to come back. She's not going anywhere. So I was like, at that time, I was like, I'm not coming back to marry this guy. I mean, I there's so many other things for me. There's more for me to accomplish than just come back and get married. And that's it. And that's what happened. So, but then I was already applying for other scholarship at that time. So by the time the U.S. Embassy was processing and we're doing the orientation of how it's going to be when I meet the president, all that stuff, I was already applying for schools here in the U.S. And I got a full scholarship to study at the University of Illinois. And yeah, I was like, when I come back, I'm not going back.
That's amazing. So you were studying, I guess, computer science in Africa, right? And then you come to Northwestern. And what are you studying at this point?
It was business and entrepreneurship. Yep.
Okay. And so you, obviously you crush it, you make it, you finish the program and you go into these respective careers, or is this when your real estate journey begins?
Yes. So when I left for the presidential test, came back in with a student visa to study for my master's degree at University of Illinois, because I was a student fellow, I was given a stipend of $1,000 and I worked for the university as a data analyst. So I analyzed their data and they waived my tuition fee and they gave me a $1,000 stipend and a debit card, of course, a bank account. So I had to find roommates because I only have $1,000. I have to pay insurance, all of that. F1 student insurance is very expensive. So $500 goes there. The other $500 has to be rent and utilities and bus fare and all of that because I couldn't drive or I don't have a car. So with that $500, I have to find roommates to be able to, you know, get a place. So I have multiple roommates. So what happened was my whole class, mostly what their parents will do is get them a place and then they will rent out the rooms, more like rent out the spaces in the room. So in one room, so let's say the rent is $800, right? Or $1,000. They will rent out each room. They will rent out to international students to sleep on there. So the whole concept of renting a room is more like renting a space. So you get your mattress and you share the one room with three other girls. So we were paying rent to them while they take the money, make profit, and take that money and pay their mortgage.
We call that arbitrage.
I was going to say it's the ultimate house hack. House hack arbitrage.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like you saw that happening. And instead of thinking, well, I'm being ripped off or that's not fair, they're charging more than they have to, you thought, oh, I want to be in that person's position. I want to own the asset and I want to be renting out to people, right?
Oh, yeah. I was like, this is an amazing idea. I was like, I'm going to do this one day. So I always had, even when I was starting searching for my first property, I was looking for a property that has more than one unit. So yes. That way I could I could do more rooms too.
I love that. See, your data scientist brain was like, okay, the pattern that I need to catch on is a property with more than one unit, more than one bedroom, a lot of spaces that can be rented as opposed to a pretty kitchen or a nice backyard or, you know, the things that everybody else is, oh, I love the oak tree in the front yard. You're like, no, there's no space in an Excel spreadsheet for an oak tree. I need to see the place that I could get the most beds into this unit. I love that. When did you start trying to invest in real estate yourself?
Yes. So after I graduated, of course, I don't have any savings, but I don't have student debt, right? And of course, coming as an international student, you get a social security, but I never knew anything about credit because I lived in a school setting. I work for the school. I go home, study, come back, work for school, go home, study, come back, go to class. That's all I knew. So there was no introduction to credit or anything, credit score. So I have a debit card that the bank gave me that I get my $1,000 from. That's it. So I don't have any credit. But again, when I graduated, I had a job to work for the CDC in Atlanta. So I moved from Illinois to Atlanta, Georgia, to work for the CDC as a data scientist. First couple of months, I started September 2019. Just a few months later, COVID happened. But before COVID happened, I've already started doing my research because I was like, I've never made that much money that I had, right? Mm-hmm. At that time, I have saved up $8,000. I'm like, I'm ready by then because I love reading. So I went and said, okay, my first paycheck, of course, I have to send money back home. And as an immigrant, you can ask any immigrant, especially from Africa, if you travel to the U.S. or travel abroad, you are like the ticket. So everybody depends on you. Every month you have to take care of your family and stuff. I'm like, this is not going to work out where I just work and send money and that's it. But when does it stop? And how, when do I save? So I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take all what I save and then start investing in real estate. And of course, before thinking of, I already knew I would do real estate, but I don't have the knowledge. So what I did was I Googled, went on YouTube, and I see Bigger Pockets coming up a lot. So this is, of course, and David and Brandon, every Wednesday, you guys have this event that you do. That's me in there every day listening. At work, I'm listening to the podcast. I'm cooking, I'm listening to the podcast. I'm in the train going to work, I'm listening to the podcast. So by the time I was already had so much information, I said, okay, they said the best way to get funding, of course, funding was number one, is to go and work with local banks. I was like, okay, I cannot afford Georgia, of course, at the time. It's like, let me start with where I saw what I wanted to do, which is Illinois. So I looked at properties in that area, the same city that I went to college in, Springfield, and it didn't. I wasn't finding properties, so I called different cities, different banks in the city, made a list, and I called each of them every day. I'll make different calls, and I get a lot of no's, but I'm used to getting no's. I didn't let that stop me, so I finally got one bank to listen to me, and I said, I just started working CDC. This is how much I make. This is just my base salary, but I'm gonna get more as I go, and this is how much $8,000 is what I saved up. I'm ready. I'm buying, looking for properties in this private room. So I already have my document and my speech ready for when I call, what I say.
And how many banks did you call, Yamu?
It's a lot of banks. I think I listed all of that. I just went on Google and I listed all the banks. I called a lot of banks. I cannot even tell the number. I called every bank in that city and in around that area.
And then finally, you got one that would hear your story.
Yeah. So she actually, she wasn't the... Well, she's the vice president of the bank now, but before she wasn't. So she was like, well, I know you got all these great things and you know how to analyze properties and you know what you want, what aspect you want to go to. However, you don't have any credit score. What you can do is go get a Discover credit card, Capital One credit card, and build your credit score. And then you can come back in 6 months or like in 1 year. So I was like, okay, at least she get to listen to me. And then I was like, you know what? Because every day I'm analyzing this. I'm a Bigger Pocket analyzing this every day. I was like, I got this. This gives me a chance. So what I did was, I was like, this is what I would do. I found a property that was listed for $52,000. It was the owners were going through a divorce and they were desperate to sell, right? They wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to separate and do all of that stuff. So I was like, okay, found this property. I went on the contract even before approaching the lady. So I approached her back and say, I found this property. It's 52,000. It's 3 units. Two bedrooms are rented for 750. One bedrooms are rented for this much. Even if only one unit is rented, my mortgage would not be, I'm still cash flow. So I wrote the numbers down because I ran it in the calculator and everything makes sense. So I submitted it to her and then I called her. I submitted it by email first and then I called her. She was like, you know what? We'll give you a chance. And they were like, we'll finance it. And that's how it happened.
Okay, so you call, you go down a list of basically every bank in the city. You keep hearing no, 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 but not a big deal because you're used to hearing no's. So you just keep going. Finally, someone is willing to hear you out. And before you actually get the pre-approval or the approval from them, you find this house and you say, I'm just gonna make an offer on it. I'm gonna get it under contract and I'll figure out the financing later. And so you get it under contract. And then you go to your banker, you're like, hey, I got it. Hello, can you approve me? And they're like, all right, we're going to make an exception for you. And then they basically fund the loan?
Yeah, they funded it. They were like, well, the reason why we did it is because it's not like your credit score is bad. You just don't have history.
Right.
So because my credit is fresh, so it doesn't have history, but it's not bad. And I don't have any other debt. I don't have any other expenses. I don't own a car at the time. I'm not paying anything except those two credit cards she told me. And I was already paying those off for 2 months before she was like, okay, we'll do it.
Wow, that's amazing. So you buy this property and you said, all right, even if I just rent one, I'm going to cash flow. What ended up happening? Did that property end up filling up more than that? How many units was it?
It's 3 units and it's two bedroom. It's a mix of 2 bedroom, 1 bedroom. Everything that could go wrong in a deal went wrong in the property. Turned out the property manager, the numbers that the agent sent me were wrong. The tenants were not actually paying because it's a COVID at this time. I closed on that property April 17. It was already shut down already. This is COVID time. The one tenant that was about to leave, and there's another tenant that hasn't paid for like 1 year. And then there was one unit that was vacant. So them telling me they fully occupied and was bringing this much was all a lot. So what I did was the unit that was the tenant was about to leave was in a better shape. So I just painted that, just basic cleaning and painting, and then rented that out. So while all this that was rented, the rent was coming in. After there was an announcement that the city were giving out to people that were behind on rent. So remember that the landlord and everyone has lied to me already at that point. So the tenant that was supposed to get that amount of money, about 8 months worth of rent, was sent to me directly. Because it was supposed to be an application between the landlord and the tenant. So we applied together and she got $8,000. So I took that $8,000 and I put it to renovate the other units. And now it's cash flow for $2,000 a month and my mortgage is only $300.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, yeah. So a bit of a rocky start, but then you're able to sort of work it out. And out of curiosity, because you said at this time you were working for the CDC, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so was this like particularly a difficult time? Because obviously you're working for the CDC, COVID is happening. I'm sure you're busy doing your actual job. And then you're also getting into real estate. Everything is going wrong. So you're trying to have it. Obviously you have to balance everything. Was that overwhelming or was it like, you know, no big deal?
It was overwhelming, but it taught me so much. So at that time, in my team, everyone in my team is a lab scientist, so work in the lab. I'm the data scientist. So every time a lab scientist go into the lab, let's say they go at 2 a.m., I have to be up by 4 a.m. to run the data so they can run it, they can get the report to send it to a particular state. So imagine all the data that's coming on all 50 states about COVID. Yeah, it was a lot. So I will be up at 4 a.m. I will have my laptop waiting to analyze data while I'm also checking my real estate and trying to figure out what the numbers and everything. So it was not easy at all, but I was still listening to podcasts. I was already in. I had to figure it out, but it was not an easy time. Yep, it wasn't.
Right. And so you go on to buy more properties, but you said that you were sort of struggling. You were kind of saving and maybe you had to send a little money to your family back home and then you had to renovate this property. So how did you keep saving money? Or how did you save money to keep buying more property? Was there a specific skill or strategy that you developed?
Yeah. So when I got that first property stabilized, I was like, okay, what next thing I need to do is move on, because I'm not having any much cash flow coming in at that time. So the property was actually cash flowing a lot, like $2,000 a month. But however, I'm not getting the money, like it's going back to the property manager. Turns out the property manager was stealing from me. Every time I talked to him, he said he uses his card to pay his contractor, because most property managers come with their own team. So he said he paid his contractor. For example, he said I paid a contractor $5,000 to do the flooring and paid for this unit, right? And I would just do that, my calculation, like the numbers are not making sense, but I know that it's cash flowing, right? Because the tenants are paying at this point. And my property manager always say, oh, Chester this or Chester that. So I know the contractor's name is Chester. Of course, I'm a data scientist. If I want to find data anywhere, I would find it. So I went and researched on him. It's a small town. I researched on him. I found him. And I was like, hey, my name is Yamu. I know that you don't have to answer these questions, but I have this property in this place. And this is the address. And I know you walked on it. So he responded back and said, yes, I will. I was like, can we jump on a call? And he was like, yeah, sure. So I asked him, I was like, does this receipt make sense? Did you charge me this much? He said, well, I don't know. It's an honest guy, older guy. He was like, I don't know how much you guys talked about your contract, but I will never charge these prices. And this other receipt is not even for your property. This is for another property. So it turns out that he was charging me, sending me receipts, because I'm out of state investor, right? He was sending me receipts of other properties that he was working on. And I was just paying for that. So I fired him. And of course, I stayed with the contractor. And he's a full-time contractor for me now. We have an amazing relationship. So even though everything went wrong, I got my team from there. And he's made me millions. So
wow.
I learned and I've been with him ever since. Worked on all my properties.
It must have been actually great, though, that he ended up being a lot cheaper than you thought, right? So whenever you used him again, it was actually more affordable. So how was it working with him? I mean, was he, because you said you work with him to this day, was he a large part of a lot of the projects that you went on to go and work on?
Oh, yeah. He worked on all my properties in Illinois. So I invested in Anamit with Illinois, Cleveland, Ohio, Illinois, and Georgia here. So all my properties, majority of my properties are in Illinois. He worked on all of them.
Wow.
But that's how I scaled. And then, yeah. So scaling from that property after finding him, I was like, okay, I'm not going to find a deal that's as amazing as the $52,000 property. That's three units that I placed for almost $90,000 after a few months of fixing it. So I was like, okay, where else could I invest in? Of course, I went back to Bigger Pockets. At this time, I'm so active. So I was like, what do I do next? So a lot of investors were talking about, especially California investors, so who are buying in Cleveland. They have properties, their cash flow is great. I was like, okay, maybe I should look into Cleveland. So I went on Bigger Pockets and I went and searched Cleveland investors. So of course, you have segments of, like, if you want to invest in a city, you find those investors there. So I reached out to them. Hey, my name is Yang. I'm a new investor. I'm looking to invest in Cleveland. So I get a lot of responses. So we'll say, don't invest here. This is the A area. This is B area. This is C area. But the area that they're recommending for me to invest in, I can't afford that. So I was like, I'll stay with a CD area and then grow up from there. And that's what I did. So I found this duplex in Cleveland that's listed for $68,000. So the owner has listed two of them, actually. So I wanted both of them because at this time, my cash flow at my property is Section 8, like all three units. Cash flow is coming in. The bank is impressed with that. So again, I bid the documentation, put all the numbers together, and I sent it to them. They were like, yeah, we'll finance it.
And this was your second deal, right? Your second and third
second deal,
the two duplex?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep. So the bank was like, yeah, we'll finance it. Even if it's out of state, the numbers look great. $68,000, mortgage was $250-something. It's two units. One was $7-something. So when the other one was $6-something. So I was getting like $1,345 or $1,350 or something like that. And the tenant paid all the utilities. I only pay water and sewer.
Okay, so walk us through this really fast. Your first property, you said you bought it for like $55,000. You fixed it up. It appraises for $90,000. So you've built in $40,000 of equity. You're like, okay, I think I experienced probably the worst part of it. I'm going to do it again. And then you go and buy two duplexes and the bank finances those. And then just for reference, how many units did you actually end up adding to your whole portfolio in year one?
In year one, I think about maybe at least seven.
Wow.
I think 7 or 8. Yeah.
First year of real estate investing with no foundation other than listening to Bigger Pockets and doing research and everything like that. Listening to the great David Green and Brandon Turner. And you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you go out and you buy 7 properties. So you get that first one, 2 duplexes. Tell us about the next 4 really fast.
Yeah. So the next one, I was like, okay, at this point, I'm getting cash flow. I'm getting a lot of cash flow. And I just got promoted, like my job. So I was like, okay, from this, I want to scale more. What can I do? Right. So at this point, I was like, how about I take the cash flow, wait a few months, and buy a really cheap house? So I already built a relationship with that contractor. So what I did was I found this property for like $15,000. It was also a foreclosed property. So I got it for cheap. They probably got it for less than that, but I got it for cheap. And it was a 5-bedroom, 2-bath. So my contractor charged me $9,000 to fix it up. Even at that point, I don't have $9,000. I think I have like $3,000 at that point that I have in my savings. And the rest, I was expecting it to come from the cash flow because I'm getting, you know, $2,000 here and $1,300 over there. So I was going to pay him in installment. So that's how I got that. Once I fixed it up, I rented it on Section 8 as well. And then I had equity in that property. So the bank was like, you can pull out equity from your property if you want to scale. That's how I did that.
David, there's a term for doing that, right? When you like fix up a property and then you take the money out.
Yeah. And there's also a method to scaling, both of which can be found at biggerpockets.com/store by checking for the Burr Book or the Scale Book. You know, Yamu, I wanted to ask, did you get these ideas? Because you're kind of like tinkering with different real estate investing strategies. You've got the arbitrage thing you talked about, rent by the room, Section 8, a little bit of long distance investing as well. You've been working into this, right? Did all of this come from Bigger Pockets?
Yes, it did. I know you're going to ask me in the end, what's my favorite book? And I have it here. So this makes sense to me because I live in Atlanta. At the time, there's no way I can afford properties in Atlanta at that time, except with a credit score. So I could only afford outside. Like, it doesn't have to be your background. And me learning that from Bigger Pockets, like, whoa, a light bulb went. I was like, of course, I can do it as thing. But a lot of people that I talked to, even at work, my colleagues, they were like, there's no way you can. Being a landlord's hard. You cannot fix a toilet while you're out of state. And I'm like, there is the method.
Yeah.
I've already read and there's, like, I've listened to multiple people do it. Why can't I do it?
Well, when you mentioned that you found the better property manager that allowed you to scale, that's what I thought of was sometimes we just kick around trying to figure out this is going wrong, that's going wrong, and it affects your emotions. You're not excited about buying more real estate because it feels like just nothing but problems. You got ripped off by the first contractor. That would make anybody want to quit, right? Like once you get your heart broke, you don't want to love again. You don't want to put yourself out there and find somebody else. So you just quit. But when you found the right person, it changed your process to be emotionally excited instead of emotionally discouraged. And so the core 4, I'm sure, really helped. Can you remind me, where were you at with passive income at the end of year 2?
By year two, by 80,000. Because this last April is my 30th investing. So by 2022, I was making like 80,000.
That's gross rents, correct? That's not your profit.
No, that's profit.
Wow,
you're making 80,000 profit after your second year.
Yeah, that's profit.
Wow, after your second year. What about your first? What was your first year? Do you know off the top of your head?
I think the first year I was close to like 6,000-7,000. But then what happened was I got a package deal, so it escalated fast. With that package deal, some of the units turnover was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So my contractors would actually go into the unit and live there, to the property and live there. So they would stay there for that 2 weeks while they fixed it. So I was renovating houses faster. So what happened was the reason why I scaled faster is with the cash flow. So everything I was getting, my expenses did not increase, nothing. My lifestyle didn't increase. It was just the same. So it's a matter of how much can I buy? Because I do have a team that's willing to do the work. So what happened was, on my LinkedIn, I was getting a lot of messages from other companies, especially the pharmaceutical companies, to work for them. I said, well, I have a job. Why? How can I work 2 jobs? Because me as an international person, I didn't know you can have 2 jobs in the U.S. So one of my friends that I met from Bigger Pockets, we got connected from Bigger Pockets and we find our own mastermind. And every Sunday we talk and we hold each other accountable. I can say accountability group. They were like, we have 2 jobs. Why can't you do it? I was like, okay. So I took that second job as a statistical programmer for LabCorp. It's a 6-figure job. I did the interview. I didn't think I was going to get it. The next day they called me. They were like, you're amazing. You can start on Monday. I was like, okay. So I got at that 6-figure job. So I was dumping all that money into buying more real estate. So I was buying packages at this point and just turning them on Section 8.
So you're working a full-time job for the CDC. You have like a mastermind with people from the Bigger Pockets community. They're like, we all have two jobs. You should have one too. And you're like, all right, sure. You go, you apply, you get a six-figure job. And then they're like, yeah. So now you're making really good W-2 income. And instead of spending it going out and just having fun, you're like, I'm just going to put it all into houses.
Everything into houses. So I buy package deals, 5 units package deals, 6 unit here, five single properties. So I was just doing and flipping them.
Okay. All right. So you, so you said your first year passive income, $6,000-$7,000 or something like that. Year two, it goes from $6,000-$7,000 of passive income a year, right? And the year two, it's $80,000 of passive income.
Yes.
Are those numbers right?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason why it got to 80,000 is because at this time, COVID had happened, 2021, everybody's talking about 2021, 2022, everybody's talking about Airbnb, short-term rentals. So in Atlanta, everybody was talking about it. So it's like social media. So my social media page, what I did was I created a new page and I followed just real estate, everything that has to do with real estate. So I get a lot of people advertising about, you know, you can get a property. You can do Airbnb without owning a property. I was like, okay. So I looked into that, buy a few courses here and there, $100 here, $150 here, and I joined these masterminds. I was like, I'm just going to jump in and do it. I created an LLC just like the courses would say, and I approached apartment complex here. So I was like, how about I get these in my LLC name and I can arbitrage it? So I got one unit, I arbitraged it, and three months into it, I got a booking for $40,000. So the company booked for this nice guy. Yeah, the company booked for him from New York. He's going to be working in Atlanta for a whole year. So it's like $44,000. And I was like, this is a no-brainer. So I got multiple. Now I have 8 units in Atlanta.
That's really cool. So let me just clarify something. When you said your year two, your passive income was 80,000, was that 80,000 per month or per year?
It's per month. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So my Section 8s were bringing in about 15,000, 16,000, right? Uh-huh. And then I was making about 40 something thousand on Airbnb with the multiple properties.
Wow. Okay, so year two is 80,000 per month. I thought it was per year. And I was like, oh, 8,000 bucks a month. I mean, most people work for like 10 years to get to that level, just $8,000 a month. So you're getting $80,000 per month. And so you get into the Section 8 game, you get into medium-term rentals, and you do arbitrage. Were any of those your favorite, or were they all just like fun because it's all just new?
Section 8 was more of a dream to give a family a home. The midterm renters were more of me buying and scaling. So when I was doing the arbitrage, I was like, okay, I already have a bad one real estate where I own my own properties. How about I take this money instead of renting from apartment complex here? How about I buy my own apartment complex? That's how the 80,000 came about for month. So what I did was, I was like, okay, I'm going to take this method in Atlanta, the arbitrage, but use the money to buy my own apartment complex instead of single families and rent it on Section 8. So I found this property that's listed for in the same city that I invest in my Section 8. I found this property that was listed for $145,000. It was abandoned for 2 years, and the landlord just wanted to sell and get rid of it. So there was a fire incident that happened, and he was going through a lot of violations. So the city removed most of the violations, but it was almost at the end. So when I came in, I offered $120,000 and he accepted. At closing, I got about $5,000. Again, I approached the bank and I told them the method that I'm doing. So I always I had this relationship with the bank already. I always make sure they know what I'm doing. So I told them about the short-term rental, mid-term rental. And they were like, that's not going to work in a small city like this. What they don't know is that property works for me because at this point I have experience with travel nurses. So that property was between two hospitals, 1.6 miles from another one hospital and 1.2 miles from another hospital. So it's perfect for me. I did the analysis, the market research, and most of the people that were renting to travel nurses there were like a month of past. So let's say a family has a basement and they were renting it to travel nurses or a shared room or something. I was like, well, if I have this property, which is 8 units, and multiple mixture of single one bedrooms and studios, I could do that too. So that's how I, the bank was like, we thought you were crazy, but this is amazing number. So with that property, that helped me scale to 20,000. Because when I had my contractor go in there, and he leased one album from that city, he came in there, he gave me a quote for 85,000. So I gave it to the bank. They were like, okay, we'll finance it. So of course I put 20% down. And my contractors, they gave me, they were like, it's a lot of work that he needs. What you can do, what we can do is waste the, you know, to give you a grace period of 3 months. So you don't pay, you only pay interest. That's amazing. So my contractor was like, we will move it. I will fix it from up and move our way down. So while they were fixing, but let's say they fixed two units, I'll furnish it and have nurses already. I will list it and have nurses already coming in. So by the time it was almost complete, I was only paying interest, no mortgage. That property alone brings me 22,000. That's how I scaled to the 80.
Wow, 22,000 a month.
A month. 22, 23, 24 here.
Yeah, you know, just 22 to 24,000, like no big deal.
Be conservative.
Yeah. So my mortgage was just 1,200, and then each unit, I pay like utilities for 1,200 with my mortgage, and each unit utilities is like $100, $110, $120, something like that.
You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short Notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP. You've heard us talk about it before. High interest rates are crushing real estate investors, leaving even some of the best investors in need of funding now. But with today's liquidity crisis, who can fill the demand? With Fundrise, America's largest direct-to-investor alternative asset manager, you have the opportunity to. Fundrise's new opportunistic private credit strategy was designed specifically for this new market environment. Fundrise supplies high-demand bridge financing on high-quality assets with credit-worthy borrowers. Top real estate investors get the funding they need while you walk away getting paid a healthy interest rate. To date, Fundrise has completed more than $500 million worth of private credit deals with an average net interest of 10.8%, and they've already amassed a pipeline worth more than $300 million. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can take advantage of this unique window of opportunity while it lasts with Fundrise's new private credit strategy. Ready to start? Go to fundrise.com/pockets to learn more. That's fundrise.com/pockets. This is a paid endorsement for Fundrise. Past performance is not indicative of future results. All investments can lead to loss. Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then, when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the Fountain of Youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com.
Okay, I've got two questions I want to ask. The first is, do you have one person managing all these assets in different locations, or are you doing that yourself?
No. So I have a property manager. Cleveland properties, remember, they came in with tenant occupied already. So I was managing for a while, but when I was scaling with the Midtown Rentals here, I have to find somebody to manage it. So I have a property manager in Cleveland. And of course, in each of the cities, the closest cities will have one property manager.
Yeah, you really are following the long distance real estate. And then you you manage those individual property managers, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Next question. How are you running your numbers? Like, you've got a different approach to this, and I'm curious if your data scientist background led to you looking at things differently, but can you share what your system looks like when a property comes your way and a bank thinks, well, this is all the income it would generate? You're able to generate more than that. What are you doing differently?
Yes. So I this is how I run my numbers, right? If the numbers don't make sense, I'm not going to push it just to say I have this unit. For Section 8, I want to get at least 800 to 1,000 profit, right? Because it comes with more work, more attention and everything. With short-term rentals, I was just looking to scale. So it depends on how much I furnish it. If I'm going to put $2,000, $3,000 or up to $5,000 per unit, I want to get at least $1,000. So with Atlanta, I could get all the way profit to $2,000, especially at the peak season, per profit per door. So that's how I run it, depending on how the property was Section 8, I'm looking at least 1,000 because it needs more work. Mm. And I have to pay the property manager maintenance, of course. So I include all of that. So that's how I run the numbers.
Okay. And I'm going to assume you're also factoring in they need to cash flow more because in some of these areas you're buying in, you mentioned C to D areas, they're not going to appreciate as much. And the headache factor is higher. So you have to make up for that by getting more cash flow to make the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak. And that's where you came up with these numbers, right?
Yes.
For people who hear this and they think, I want to do what she's doing, which I'm sure everybody's going to be thinking, what are some of the challenges that people need to be aware of if you want to grow a portfolio the way you grew yours?
There's so many challenges. You're going to go through crappy contractors. There's no investor that's going to tell you, oh, yeah, I have one contractor from day one, never stole from me, nothing. I went through crappy contractors to get there. Property managers, even though you have a property manager, doesn't mean you don't manage. You still have to run the numbers to make sure this makes sense. Because if I didn't do that, I wouldn't know that a property manager was stealing from me or even sending me receipts of other properties, right? It's not an easy way out. You have to figure it out. You have to run the numbers. And of course, you have to always analyze deals for it to make sense. If it doesn't make sense, you can't force it.
There's also, I'm hearing you mention there's a lot of management that goes into the properties once you have them. You have to look very close, which I think you learned at a relatively early stage because in one of your first deals or the first deal, you were taken advantage of.
Yes.
That separated you from this idea of passive income that you just bought it, forgot it, and there's nothing more to it. That rhymed. Maybe we need to start saying that. But you have to pay attention to your investments, that it's not a thing that runs itself. Like, it's often described that you buy a property, it's turnkey, it makes money, and you just go have fun on the beach or vacation everywhere, and your real estate pays for all of it. You don't have to still work. Has that been your experience, or has it been more like it's a second job?
Or a third job for Yamu.
Yeah.
I've gone through so much mistakes and I've learned, I can say I could go chill at the beach now because I've got everything in place. I have a property manager in place, I have systems in place, I've automated things. But at the beginning, no, you have to actually work the business to actually make it work. You can't just buy and just forget it. There's so many things that is involved with it. Yeah. So now I do day-to-day stuff like, I have a VA that go through my funds finder messages. I have property managers that do. All I do now is sign leases and analyze this.
So Yami, you came from Africa. I got to imagine that the tax code is very different there than it is here. So you come here, you're crushing it. You're making $80,000 a month. You have two full-time jobs. You're making six figures on the W-2 side of things. Tell me a little bit about your tax situation once you actually started really making money. Was this like a big shakeup for you where you're like, oh my gosh, I have to pay the government money? Like, what was that whole situation like?
That's a really good question. Like, it's a shock coming from Africa where we don't pay taxes like that. So the beginning, I had already had my son, and because I wasn't making a much, I actually get a tax refund. I was like, this is America. This is amazing. America is nice. At the end of the tax, you get money. Then I started investing in real estate. And then when CPA tells me, you're going to be paying the IRS $30,000. I was like, what? I was like, no. But in real estate, when you invest, you get to save. It was like, no. But you not when you make millions. And I was like, what? That's when I realized like what my tax bracket was. And then he said, and also your W-2 is not helping because you have two W-2s that are paying you six figure now. And I was like, oh my God. He said, if it wasn't for real estate, you would be paying way more to IRS than what you're. So the real estate is actually saving you. And then I was like, yeah, this can't continue. I can't pay the IRS this much. So, of course, I let the 4 months ago, I let the LACO joke go, and I just stick with the CDC one because now it doesn't really make sense having that kind of cash flow. Especially when I added my Savannah properties here that are bringing me about $15,000, $16,000 a month in just Savannah, Georgia. I was like, it doesn't make sense for me to get two jobs now. So I let it go.
Well, it's also probably really hard to achieve real estate professional status with two full-time jobs and being the real estate thing. I know that there's always conflicting stuff on that. So this always reminds me of that. There's a meme out there that's like, it's the U.S. government. They're like, all right, you have to pay us taxes. And then you're like, how much? And they're like, we don't know. And it's like, okay, what happens if I pay you too little? And they're like, oh, you owe us a lot of money if you do. We'll fine you. And it's like, what if I pay too much? And it's like, we won't tell you. You have to figure that out for yourself. And that really is exactly what the tax system is. It's like, you don't know until your CPA is like, here you go. You owe $30,000, $40,000. So you quit your job. And did you figure out tax strategies or anything that was saving you money in the long run? Like, were you doing any kind of cost segregation or any depreciation to knock down your tax bill?
Yeah, so my CPA that I hired does all of that for me. And then we have meetings every quarter. So he tells me and project how much I'm going to be. I remember one time it was like, you have about $60,000 that you need to spend before November. And I was like, oh, okay. So I just dumped it on a property. I bought a property for $40,000, mall house. I fixed it up. It appears for $200,000.
This sounds like Rob's tax strategy. He's just like that. I owe how much? I'm going to go buy something right now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, all right, let's write it off, baby. It's a write-off. You guys ever seen that Schitt's Creek where he's like buying everything and they're like, you can't just keep buying it and saying it's a write-off. I'm like, it's a write-off.
It's a write-off. Who pays for it? The government.
The government. The write-off people. I don't know.
So let me get a recap of your overall portfolio, Yamu. You have Cleveland properties and those are mostly Section 8, correct? Uh-huh. Okay, you have Savannah, Georgia properties. How are those being operated?
So those are midtown rentals.
And then where else other than Savannah and Cleveland?
So I have Illinois, I have Springfield, I have Champaign, Urbana-Champaign, all that sub areas in Illinois. So I have like 8 units here and there, 5 units. Those are all, so since I got the 8 unit, it makes sense because I was getting so many inquiries for travel nursing and I'm not able to get them a place because it's all booked out. I was like, I need another one. So I got another apartment complaint. I got another one. I got another one. I kept going.
That's so cool.
So I have a mix of short-term rentals. I have a mix of midterm rentals, Section 8.
Okay. And how many units total are we at now?
So I have 33 doors, including the one that I just bought here. So that's 34.
Wow. So you have about 34 doors now. 34, I think, is what you said.
Uh-huh.
When you were a kid, you sleeping on the floor, all you wanted was a bed of your own in a house.
Yes.
How does it feel to achieve what you've achieved?
It's unreal. Like, it's sometimes like, this is me? This is, and sometimes, and this is why I give a lot, especially when it comes to my team. So I know where I started, right? It's just so real for me. But I always knew that I wanted just one house. I wanted a nice bed. I wanted to experience what other kids experienced that I did it. But I never knew beyond my imagination, this is all God's work. God put me in this place to actually buy houses, fix them up, and give it to families. That's why I said earlier, I mentioned with Section 8 is more of me housing kids like me or someone who could not buy their own home. And then the short-term rentals just came into play. But it's so fulfilling for me.
That's really cool. Is eight-year-old you proud of Yamu?
Yes. I am very proud of myself. I'm so grateful to God.
Well, you mentioned the tips with keeping your contractor happy. I'd love to end with that. If you have anything you can share with the audience about strengthening that relationship with your contractor and keeping them happy, I'd love to hear it.
Just to say this, my husband says when my contractor calls, my phone ring, I'm so eager to take the call that anyone else, including him. I was like, well, he made me millions. You did it. When they're walking, I buy lunch. When they send me pictures and I'm so happy with the work and I'm like, dinner for me. So they're staying there.
Yeah.
And also, I stock their fridges, buy groceries, and send it because they stay there when they fix the properties with his guys. So those are nice things. And I upgrade his phone. He's an older guy, doesn't like technology. And just little things like that.
That's really cool. Yeah, you got to take care of your contractors. I mean, finding a contractor that you click with is hard already, but finding a contractor that you can click with for 5 years is even harder. And I think, got to keep them happy so that you can keep a lifelong of home building and home renovation going, you know?
Well, Yamu, I think that we're all floored after listening to what you've done. I mean, you talk about it so nonchalant that you're doing this well. I mean, the collective jaws of the Bigger Pockets sphere have dropped as they were listening to this. We will definitely need to have you back to dive deeper into some of this because there's so many elements from the power of your story to the way that you've scaled to the passive income you're making to the systems that you've set up to how Bigger Pockets helped you learn all this. I think so many of us listen to this and we only see the reasons that it can't work. And you came in and said, wait, you're going to give me all this information for free. And you went and put it to play. And what do you know? You're one of the most successful investors that we have ever interviewed. And how many years has it been?
It's going to be 3 years, April 17th.
Yeah, there's people that take 3 years and can't finish one of the books. I just think I don't even know how to put into words what this has been like. It's just fantastic. And I really appreciate you sharing your story. Are there any last tips that you'd like to leave with our audience who are struggling to get started?
It's just to start. And like Bigger Pockets said, analysis paralysis. If you stay there, you don't actually jump and do execution, it's not going to work out. You can listen to all the podcasts. You can read all the books. You can go to all the networking events. You can do all of that. But if you don't actually execute, it's not going to happen. And I know it's scary, but you have to do it. Yeah.
Well, when you grow up without a bed, I don't think you're as scared of failure as somebody who has never faced that level of adversity. And the littlest amount of rejection seems overwhelming. So
yeah,
I mean, who would have thought that those bed bugs would someday be a blessing? But like, maybe that could be the title of your book, How Bed Bugs Become Blessings, when you write it, because you definitely need to. Rob, any last minute thoughts from you?
No, just wanted to thank you, Yamu. I appreciate the vulnerability and the openness that you had with us. I know it's like, probably hard to talk about sometimes, especially, you know, coming onto Bigger Pockets. But I think there will be hundreds of thousands of people that listen to this podcast and their life will change because of your story. So I just want to thank you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Yep. It was a pleasure to have you. Where can people find out more about you if they want to get in touch?
So my Instagram is Building Wealth from Rentals. I actually got that name from, I think Ashley has something like that. So when I was creating my own page, I was like, this is for me. And I started as me just doing it to hold myself accountable. So I started to like document my own stuff. So I was like, what name can I get? And I was like, Building Wealth from Rentals. So I started with that. So you can find me at Instagram, Building Wealth from Rentals, and TikTok, Building Wealth from Rentals.
There you go. Send her a message. Rob, where can people find you?
Well, you know, I mean, it's not a big deal. All right. So I don't want everybody that's listening to this to be like, whoa, that's crazy. That's a big deal. But, you know, your friend Rob here is now verified on Instagram. Mm. So if you look up Robuilt, R-O-B-U-I-L-T, I'll have a little beautiful blue check mark next to my name. And you'll never have to worry about me asking you randomly for crypto or to send me Forex. So find me on Instagram, look for the blue check, and I will never message you first. What about you, David?
You can find me at davidgreen24.com. And you can also find me on all the social medias at DavidGreen24, including YouTube. Yeah, my brain's still trying to wrap itself, Yamu, around how you did this in 3 years. It seems like it should have been full of holes, but as you've talked, we've seen very few holes in your entire strategy. It was like you were born to do this. I mean, like, it almost just seems like you had divine intervention.
Thank you.
That you are a real life superhero. And I hope that your husband knows that. You should go tell him, as well as your kid.
Thank you.
And you have another one on the way, right? Any day now. You're going to be.
Any day now. Any day now, she'll be here.
Congratulations. That's amazing. Congrats.
Any day now.
There you go. Yeah. Make sure that when you're listening to the podcast, you put your headphones around that so that she can hear all the things that you're learning.
I think she's gonna come to the world being an investor.
Yes, that's exactly.
She has listened to so many podcasts.
She's got no choice. That's awesome. All right, we'll let you get out of here. This is David Green for Rob. Quick, I need to buy a house so I don't pay taxes. I'm solo. Signing off.
The market is changing. Finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
BiggerPockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.